Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Cool kids like, and they call it Rehef, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. It's terrific to be back at the Fringe. I've had a couple of years off, but so far so good. It seems to be nice to be back. I did nearly kill a Scotchman on the first day I was here. A Scotchman, yeah, it was a man coated in sausage meat. So you happy now? Are you happy now, Scotch people? You really haven't been here before. He's been. Hello, how you doing? There you go. That's my impression of you. Just thought I'd start that off. I was quite tired. I drove up with my family, and it was quite stressful driving through central Edinburgh, as you're aware. And I was very tired. I'd driven all the way up. And I was turning a corner, and I got to off the main road into the road we were staying in. And there was a Scottish man halfway across the road, just as my car was approaching. I had to brake. I was very tired. I nearly got him. He sort of stumbled and went, look where you're going. I said, yeah, well, I could say the same to you, mate, couldn't I? You are in the road, so it's best not to cross. But I thought it might be quite good if I had killed him. It would have been good publicity, wouldn't it? That would definitely made the papers. And I also think if I could kill one Scottish person a day, you know, that as a kind of threat, that would make you... Finally, you'd take notice of me. Come and see my show, or another Edinburgh man may die. It's lovely to be here. We're here on a Friday afternoon. When I booked this in, I thought I was coming on Saturday afternoons. We booked it at the last minute. And I said on Twitter, every Saturday afternoon we'll be doing a podcast. Someone tweeted me and said, you know the 4th is a Friday. I said, no, it was too late. We were booked in. So incredibly, we managed to get an audience here. I thought, you know, it might be to sell a big theatre out on a Saturday. Not a Friday. Who's skived off work to be here? Cheer now. Yeah, well done. Thank you very much. That's what I'm relying on. The basic laziness. and fecundity of it's Friday. Don't bother. You're not going to go back, are you?
Nah, no point now. It's Friday knockoff the weekend. My first show, I'm doing a show called Oh Frig, I'm 50 at the Pleasance One every night. 7:30 if you want to come. The first show was delayed by half an hour because someone had dropped 5,000 ping pong balls in the theatre. They all had to be picked up. Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe, ladies and gentlemen. What kind of prick brings 5,000 ping pong? Well, I'm doing something avant-garde thing with ping pong balls. Anyway, look, we're going to crack straight on. We've got an amazing lineup of guests for this first show. It's big heroes of the Fringe, big heroes of mine. They're probably best known for the busking they do in Swanston Street Mall. That's probably why you're here. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome the Doug and the All-Stars? Here they are. They're coming in now. Come and sit over here. Hooray! Fantastic. I'll move over a bit here so I can see you all. Just manoeuvring into position. There's Paul, Tim and Paul.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, hi, everybody.
Hello. How fantastic to see you. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, lovely good. To be here. And what beautiful weather you've put on for us today.
I just like the constant drizzle, so you're not quite sure whether you want to put a coat on or not. Just you get wet in any case. Lovely. But you did start at the Swanston Street Mall. Is that where you just began?
In fact, we began. I think it's great you've done your research
thank
and
you.
You've got your researchers onto it, but
thank
you're
you.
Completely
wrong.
Erroneous. Yeah, okay. In that
you have played there, though, right?
Oh, no, we did play there, yeah. But we began our journey. In the world of theatrics, in Canberra.
All right.
The nation's capital, you may not know it, over here. it's a small place sort of stuck between Sydney and Melbourne, and on the streets of Canberra we began busking as a little busking group and in a place called Petrie Plaza.
Okay.
And it spread out from there.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about your show straight away. I came to see your show last night.
Yes.
Which was, I enjoyed very much. My show's about getting old and turning 50. We both, in fact, we did our first Edinburgh's 1987. So this is our 30th anniversary for all of us of the first time we came to the Edinburgh Fringe, though you were going for a few years before that in Australia. And it's a show about ageing and tragedy and finding fun in tragedy, I suppose. It's what I really liked about it is the relationship the two of you obviously have been working together a lot longer than Paul at the end as well, but the relationship between the two of you, I think, is sort of like Laurel and Hardy, but written by Samuel Beckett. There's an element of sort of bullying, but it's quite existential.
Yeah, there's a bit of Pinter in it as well, because we go round and round and round because he's very forgetful.
So Tim is in a wheelchair for the people at home. You have MS.
Yes, I've got multiple sclerosis. Everybody?
And it doesn't... comes in for a degree of mockery within the show, I suppose.
Oh, we certainly discuss it in a very honest way.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of the time, I think people hide their feelings in regards to what goes on when someone around them is disabled and when they're... that they have the job as primary carer, which I have while we're on tour.
Yeah.
It's a job I take great pride in. And, of course, Paul at the end is the secondary carer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I don't care as much.
Oh.
To be honest, it took me 15 minutes to notice the wheelchair in the show because I was so distracted by your beard. I was just thinking, that's horrendous. How could that happen to someone?
Let's not be dishonest. You're getting there slowly.
Yeah. But that's quite a change. Looking back at the old clips of the original three of you and... and you play some of your old stuff on screen, which is a very daring thing to do, I think, to put yourself up against your young versions. You're very sexy young men, and I'm not saying you're not sexy middle-aged men, but you're very sexy young men, I think it's fair to say.
This has got a little bit awkward for me.
It's that juxtaposition. It's a very emotional and interesting juxtaposition to see yourself, to put yourself up against your younger self in that way. And it's an amazing thing to be able to do, isn't it?
Well, we did a similar thing last year when we first sort of started working together again with a song we used to call the War Song, And it was a very similar sort of experience, but it was amazing. It was quite cathartic sort of experience. You could feel it move across the audience, this emotionalism, when they saw how age had really made us decrepit and taken all the wonder away from us completely.
But it's good to embrace it. I mean, I saw a clip of you on one of your early Australian TV shows where you were talking about old people having sex and how disgusting it was. And,
it's still disgusting, Richard.
But now you just get to
experience
it.
You just have to do it, yeah.
But I think it's interesting. I mean, there's real sort of tragedy, obviously, in ageing for all of us. But you're finding the comedy within that tragedy. It's a show that works on a lot of different levels. I know you came last year sort of was that the first kind of return? You've done some little one-off specials, but this was your returning show last year.
It certainly was. And we didn't know if we had anything that we could show to the people of the world. And probably the best thing that ever happened to the Doug Anthony All-Stars was Tim getting MS. Because I'm recommending it for... It's for all the young comedians, get yourself a disabled person.
Yeah. And
it's a great gimmick.
But this is something that you knew about for quite a long time, Tim. You know, that you,
well, you I knew something was going wrong because everything kept going wrong. And But I'm male, so of course they didn't ask a medical professional. And so I just managed to avoid it and ignore it for a long time. But eventually I thought I might as well go and get them to poke pins in me. And that took a long time because they have to discount all of the other things it could be. Maybe he's just stupid, they said. And they looked at the file and said, yep, he's definitely stupid. So, eventually they came up with the diagnosis, which is if you've got MS, it's kind of a relief because it means all of the different symptoms you have can be hit with one hammer. If you don't have MS, you still go, oh, look at the brave soldier.
But was that part of the reason that you sort of broke up in the early to mid-90s, you stopped working together? Was it actually the real reason why you...
No, it was part of the reason. I was raising a family, I had a cantankerous bride, and we did a lot of travelling. We went around the world all the time. It was quite exhausting, yeah. And that was also a thing that meant, you know, I had to say, look, I've got to pull up stumps because I'm falling to pieces.
Yeah.
And certainly weird things were happening. We were doing some shows in London. We'd just done our Edinburgh run, I think, and we were about to tour the counties of Ireland. And we were at the Jeanetta Corcoran Theatre in London, and we used to have this fun song about cancer. And which involved a German sort of lederhosen slapping of the thighs. And at the time, I had a giant boil on the... I don't want to go into it, but there's a giant boil on the inside of my thigh. Yeah. And at one stage, Tim and I were doing this slapping dance. Simultaneously, he fell to the left and I fell to the right. And we realised that there's something drastically wrong with me. It was easily lanced, but his was an ongoing problem that didn't really materialise till a few years later, and we sort of realised what was going on.
Sure. Something wrong with me, something wrong with Paul, something wrong with Devlin, which was the name of the boil. There's a devil in that boil.
And so, let's go back to the earlier days, or certainly Edinburgh. The thing that everyone, all the comedians, remembered about you, apart from it being a fantastic, sort of outrageous and exciting act, was that you were very smelly.
Oh.
You're a very smelly group of people. You never washed your stage clothes.
No, we did. Well, we came from Australia, and it's very hard in our country to get people's attention. Here you have lovely mannered audiences who are used to theatre and so on, and it's a cultured people. You understand that there is a fourth wall that exists between the performer and the audience, but in Australia we don't have that sort of understanding.
Sure.
And so we had to really get people's attention, and we wanted to intoxicate all their senses. And so we did the oral and the visual, but we also hit the olfactory pretty hard.
Yeah.
But it was difficult for many people to share a dressing room with us.
Which worked out fine because it meant we always had our own dressing room.
Could you smell yourselves, or did you not? Could you not smell yourself?
Oh no, we could. Yeah, we could definitely. We have different scents. it must be said. And I was the worst. I would sweat, and I also had a bit of a habit of putting a very sweaty shirt into a plastic bag, which tends to make it ferment slightly and builds a... Yeah, don't try it, kids. And it builds up a viscous sort of sheeny sort of that permeates the material, so a cotton would just become very sort of yes. Anyway,
Did you stay with the same ones all the way, or did they rot and you changed your clothes?
Oh no, they rotted completely rotted. And some of this was very heavy material as well, like the jackets eventually just rotted through. And once the group disbanded, the Victorian Museum of the Arts wanted to get the costumes.
Yeah, I saw this.
And I wrote a note saying that we'll give you the costumes, we'll donate them to the museum for the prosperity of Australia and future generations, but we insist that they are never washed.
Yeah.
And they took those costumes and they destroyed them and made copies.
Oh, really?
Because Richard, our old guitarist, went to see them once on display, and they were just not our costumes. Clearly, someone had gone, this is revolting and disgusting. There's no way we can do this.
Might have just been a cleaner. That happens sometimes in art galleries. Some of the cleaner comes and throws the art away because they think it's just rubbish. There's a pile of old clothes here. Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame they've been... it's quite exciting.
Yeah, not many people would agree with that estimation.
It's amazing. they went in a museum. That's awesome. And there was another group, a member of the group, and I'm not going to talk about the most obvious member of the group. There was a member of the group called Robert Piper to begin with.
Oh,
What happened to him? Why is he not back on the reunion?
He is the UN ambassador to Palestine at the moment.
They had to choose one of you, and he was the one they hit.
We thought, he's never going to make it, that fella. He worked with Bill Clinton for many years after Bill's presidency, when Bill was working with the UN.
Yeah.
He was the right-hand man. And after that, became affiliated with the UN, and he and his family have travelled the world and lived in Nepal. The last time I saw Robert was in Nepal.
Yeah.
He's had stations with his family all around the world. So
do you think he regrets not still being in the dugout?
He's brokenhearted. In fact, the way that I believe he began many of his instigated conversations with the UN to people of different cultures from all around the world was just by saying, I don't know if you know this, but I used to be in the Doug Anthony All-Stars.
And that united the world. Everyone loves the Doug Anthony all around the world. United in possibly in being offended by you.
How do you know about Robert?
I know everything
though?
About you. I know everything about you.
Okay,
if it's on Wikipedia, I know it. That's how I know about it. But you started from this. It's kind of the clothes thing. It's a kind of punk sensibility, is it? A little bit. You were sort of quite. You came into the group and sort of made it a bit harder edge than maybe it was right at the start. Is that true?
Oh, it was very fey before I joined. Yeah. It was quite sad. It was about three fellas dancing around. This man I first saw in Garema Place in Canberra, standing on a milk crate, dressed in an orange sort of saffron robe with quite a full beard. And he was 18 years old, and he was telling everyone where they'd gone wrong with their lives. And I thought, who is that goddamn idiot? And I didn't realise at the time, like a year later, I'd be working with him on the Doug Anthony All-Stars. Right, so right. That was a weird trajectory.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah.
And, Kate, you're very abrasive. What I quite like is seeing you 30 years on, there's the same spirits there and the same anarchy's there, and it's still... offensive and brilliant in that way, but there's a real affection between, even though you're being nasty, Paul, a lot of the time.
It's a perception thing.
It's sort of a show about the love between two friends. I think you're nasty to Tim, and then you'll just go over and just slightly adjust his position to make sure he's comfortable, and there's a real kind of lovely brotherly affection between the two of you, I think.
Well, the frustrations of being a carer for someone with, a disability, it it felt like it was good to actually get those out. Because if you're a carer, you don't spend every hour of the day, you know, with that person thinking, I'm doing such a great thing, I'm just having a great time. There are times when you could kill them. Come on, let's look at ourselves. And we figure we bring that out to the light just to point out that you can love these people, care for them, but, you know, if things get tough, you can always kill them.
But I love the undercurrent is that, you know, I mean, you've been through a lot together, and I mean, I don't think if Stuart Lee ended up in a wheelchair.
you know, the other side that you might not. The thing you might not notice as well is that there is a revenge aspect when someone is in a wheelchair and slightly disabled and not able to counter some of the horrible things that you do. So, you know, if you did want to get back at Stuart, then him in a wheelchair is a very fine way of doing it. You know. I've left him in corners sometimes.
And trams can't turn.
And how are you finding Edinburgh? Because Edinburgh's a pretty hard city to negotiate with. Certainly middle-aged legs, but...
This is not a wheelchair-friendly city. I said last night, it's not a wheelchair-friendly city. And in fact, it's positively hostile to people in wheelchairs. And just having the cobblestones everywhere, it's like you've put a house on the street and just decided to... Bitumen, ladies and gentlemen, bitumen could be something that would help. A spirit level would be great occasionally, just to employ that, just to get a bit of smoothness about the damn place.
It's great. I mean, I guess once you've had cobbles this long, it's hard. It must be difficult to get rid of them because you're probably not allowed to get rid of them. But it is... I mean, it's going to make a lot of people disabled because they're slippery as well. So, you know, it's disabled people, then they can't get around, then they die. It's just a way of keeping the population down here in...
it's a beautiful circle, isn't it? It just keeps going.
And the venues are hard to get. I mean, your venue's very high up, and I'm presuming there's a nice lift up there because it was hard walking up there.
Oh, yeah, we have a pulley arrangement. And we hook up the donkey and get on, and up I go.
I don't like being referred to as the donkey. But, you know, the venue we're in, is it the Fourth at the Pleasance? It's one of the few venues in Edinburgh that's actually got air conditioning.
Yeah.
And we need to get air conditioning because Tim gets quite affected by the heat and so on. And you know how in a room like this, when it's overly warm, you may get a bit soporific and start to fall asleep. It affects Tim in the same way, but more profoundly. So... Yeah. You know, so we needed to find a place that's air-conditioned, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but you've built a city here that is only really good for really cold weather. And as soon as it gets a little moderately warm, it just goes to hell in a handbasket. So,
I mean, there are venues that are literally sauna-like. When I did the White Belly at the Underbelly a few years ago, there was... The sweat of other people was dripping off the ceiling onto you. Mm. Also, your own sweat was... I mean, my eyebrows couldn't cope with it, so there was just sweat going into your eyes.
Well, it's accumulated sweat from other performers as well. That's the disturbing thing. Probably the acrobats that were in there earlier, or the jugglers who sweat profusely, have probably left a nice crust over the ceiling.
And I also note that you've played quite a lot of hoaxes on journalists, which I'm hoping you'll stick one in here.
I don't believe that's us, no.
No, okay.
Or is that a hoax?
I understand you were in Batman with Jack Nicholson. I'm waiting to see you.
That was a mistake. You know, all we did was put out a little press release and everybody goes, oh, wow, they must be in Batman because they say they are. Simple misunderstanding.
And that got reported on the front page of magazines and stuff.
Well, this was his instigation. I thought it was maybe a step too far. But there were a number of comedians up here that were in the first Batman.
Right.
And they'd been in Edinburgh and they were... Well, I can't remember the names now, but they played small parts in Batman. And so we just thought it was a joke that we'd say we're in Batman. But it got a lot of momentum very quickly in Australia, which surprised us. And so we did a few interviews where we said, oh, yes, we're in Batman. Oh, we're the Joker's henchmen. This one is an immaculate liar. And we did a story with the Green Guide, one of the major Melbourne papers, at The Age, and the journalist, I've got no idea why, but was a little bit suspicious and demanded, because we had said we'd been on Jack Nicholson's boat on the Seine, I think, in going up and down with Jack for a couple on the Riviera with Jack, having a week of great times. And they said, "Well, we want to see some photographs." And this one rang them up and said, "There's no way Jack would allow that. And if you don't want to publish, don't publish. But we are not making this tawdry." By having photographs of us and Jack Nicholson. And, of course, they went to press saying that we were in Batman with photographs they'd mocked up themselves. I mean, we were sort of attacking fake news before there really was a lot of fake news. So.
Great. You might have ended up in the Batman producer might have gone, "Fuck, they're in it. We better get them over."
Well, the amazing thing was, because there was a... it was revealed at one stage that we had lied about it. I think when people actually saw the Batman film. but a time elapsed between the first Batman and the second Batman, and by the time the second Batman came around, what did you say?
"We're going to be in Batman too." It worked like a charm, because people said, "Oh, I thought you were involved in Batman somehow. Oh, by George, yeah." So we got the same kind of media. It worked very well.
And you're the boy who cried Batman. Eventually, you are in Batman, and they go, "No, no one's going to believe that now." But you've done loads of other things as well, aside from the Doug Antonys, of course. And you both presented big TV shows in Australia.
Yep.
And you've been right. Have you written a musical, Tim, and a film?
Yeah, oh, we've done a piece called Billy and the Dinosaurs, which has an orchestra and, you know, dinosaurs. It's like Peter and the Wolf, but we have a dinosaur instead of a rabid dog.
And what instrument it signifies a dinosaur?
Oh, all of them. But mostly drums, you know, bomb, 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 bomb. But that will be coming to the UK eventually. We just have to beg and plead.
And what was you? You became massive stars. I mean, you were stars in the UK before you were in Australia, right? And then you went back to Australia, and you were big TV star.
We did Friday Night Live here. It was one of our first, really, probably our first television appearance.
Right.
And that was great. And it was a phenomenally weird experience for us to be in a show like that and to realise its effect on the populace, because we were sort of living around the Soho area when in London, and people, I remember a dispatch rider, a courier, on a motorcycle, sort of coming up onto the pavement to say he'd seen the show last night, and he just thought it was extraordinary. Sure. And suddenly we were aware that there was a real sort of, you know, the ability of television to communicate to people was phenomenal. Yeah. And it was... when we went back to Australia, Wendy Harmer, a comedian from our country who'd been here and on that special as well, or on that night of Friday Night Live, took the tape to a guy called Ted Robinson, and Ted Robinson saw us and he thought we were fantastic and was wondering how he was going to get to New Zealand to meet these wonderful New Zealanders. So that's how we began our television career, I suppose, in Australia.
I mean, it was different than anything that was happening in the UK, I think. It was unpolitically correct before that was a thing, I suppose, wasn't it? And it was you were quite nasty and aggressive.
A lot of that did come from the streets too, because we started as buskers, and once again we mentioned it before, but the Australian audiences they're not really interested in watching you, and so we had to employ a number of different tactics to keep people on the street, because you've always got things to do when you're on the street. You've got shopping to do. There's a reason you're in the city. Yeah. You're not there to see a couple of buskers. We used to, you know, if we managed to get them there for a couple of seconds, we'd have them there for an hour, because we would take their handbags and purses and other things while we were performing. We'd distract them with someone being over here, and then I'd go around and nick things. And we found that, particularly if we stole their children, that they would hang around. We used to put the children in the guitar case and just have them... which maybe you wouldn't get away with these days, but...
When we first came to Edinburgh, people were a bit alarmed by the amount of aggression and activity that there was in the show based upon all that loud busking. But, you know, our aggression, you know, it wasn't just our fault. I mean, the audiences were Scottish. And, you know, you're barging into a bar. It was called the Bear Pit at the time. And there were, you know, all the tough people of Scotland sitting there. And we figured we'd just have to pick a fight, otherwise these people will kill us. And so at the first heckle, we decided, well, that's it, it's on. So we started throwing punches and bottles and glasses and pouring beer on people and overturning tables. And sure enough, the Scots helped by joining in.
It was the original Fringe Bar at the yeah. university. An yeah. incredible place, like some sort of Kafkaesque nightmare yeah. when you're in there, because they had that second level. And I remember some nights when there were people up on that balcony, and then people behind them standing on the tables, and people right behind them. So it was like a wave of faces that went right up to the roof
yeah.
On all sides, and a phenomenal environment. And if you're a mime artist, if you're a juggler, if you showed one hint of fear, then they would just tear you apart.
Yeah.
And they were as critics, they weren't particularly subtle. and people I know that were on around the same time, but just got torn apart yeah. By these you know, the Scottish crowd.
Yeah. Oh, one guy was stabbed. A performer was stabbed with a chair. Now that's got to be a Scottish thing, because I'd never heard of it anywhere else.
And there was a magician that came on with us once, and I've forgotten his name, which is a terrible thing. But he was a lovely guy. But he was doing like the Las Vegas sort of style magic act. He said, you know, and he had this, you know, the tuxedo and so on. And he was so affected by the way that they screamed abuse at him that he decided that he was completely down the wrong path with the type of magic he was doing. Yeah. So he went to India for I think about a year and a half, and tried to find this this fabulous fabled Indian book of magic that has all these like all the incredible tricks that they, you know, the bed of nails and yeah, the yeah. swallowing of swords and all this. He wanted to go down that path because he thought that would make the Scottish audiences, I suppose, approve of him more. And he spent a long time there because he had to really work his way into the system to get the trust, to get this fabulous Indian book of magic. And he shared some of the secrets. And it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen a performer do the broken glass, where they break glass and they put a little tissue over it, and then they put their head on the broken glass and get someone to stand on their head. It's those, or the bed of nails. It had all those things in it. And I said, so what is it with the broken glass? What's the skill? What's the trick? And he said, what you do is you get green glass and you break it, and then you put tissue over the top, then you put your face on it and get someone to stand on your head. Apparently that's all the tricks.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And other Paul, hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm a bit tired over here. The view is excellent, I must say.
It's tiring. How did you get involved with these other two?
Oh, I was dragged in against my will. I'm not an original member, but I am original. But they dragged me here in 1989. I did my first Edinburgh supporting these men, which was a horrible thing to do to a young, timid, toothless, bald Australian. And it was like throwing the atheist to the lions. I just didn't know where I was. I was lost, and I think they just thoroughly enjoyed that. And it's what they did to Al Murray as well. They get a support act that they know will probably bomb, and then they just, it makes them look better. And that's been my role for the past 35 years.
You're very funny in the show, and you come on and open the show and do some proper jokes, and then they come on and just swear at each other.
Yeah, they won't let me talk when they're on. That's happening today as well. I don't know why that happened. I find it quite offensive. thank you for the opportunity.
It's okay, it's nice to talk. I'll talk to you again in about 20 minutes.
I'll just get me out the back.
Yeah, you mentioned Al there. Now you're big friends with Al Murray. So did he toured with you?
Well, he's our benefactor in regards to this, because he's basically brought us back to Edinburgh, because I think Tim had the idea of coming back, and I thought, that's insane. Why would we want to do that? And Cameron, our manager, came here and was asking a few people that ran various venues, if they have us. And Al heard that we're thinking of coming back, and just scooped Cam up in his arms and said, I'm here. I'm here for you. I'm the only man you need. Talk to me. So, yeah, he's a great fella, and he seems to have a lot of love for us. I don't know why.
Well, we were up we were up in 87 and 88, and so we saw you when we were students, and I think it had like a big effect. There was a lot of people around that time. I mean, I think your first year you were up, you were in the same venue as Jerry Sadovitz. I think it was the only two. I was talking to Rich Allen Turner last night. He said that he promoted you, and you were in the Harriet Watt University, which is somewhere away.
Oh, that was our second year. The first year we were at the Pleasance, and we arrived. This is insane. We went to the Adelaide Arts Festival, and we did quite well at the Adelaide Arts Festival. And then people there went, "Oh, have you heard about this other festival?" And we went, "No, we just thought this was the only sort of arts, sort of fringy sort of thing."
Yeah.
And they went, "No, there's this place called Edinburgh in Scotland, and they have a festival there as well." And we thought, "Oh, well, we'll." Oh, why don't we go there? So we just... it's a long story, but we ended up getting to London. We managed to get a busking gig in at Covent Garden, which was like a mecca for us, only because this man was so tall and handsome and conned our way in, because apparently the selection process for buskers normally takes months.
And we were going to be in Batman one day.
And the next thing we knew, we were on the train coming to Edinburgh, and we arrived. We didn't have anywhere to stay. We put out the guitar case. We told people as we were busking on the mound, which you could do once upon a time, that we didn't have anywhere to stay. And the generosity of the Scottish people was amazing, because at the end of the bus, there were three addresses in that guitar case, people saying that have us in their homes, which was phenomenal. And Christopher Richardson at the Pleasance was the only... place that we'd booked into. But our show, the only show we had, was in the last week of the festival, and it was on at 12 o'clock at night. Yeah, so we didn't, for the first 2 weeks of the festival, we didn't actually have a show.
Right.
And we thought we'd just busk and try and make some money. Scotland busking. That's how naive we were. And we were lucky. Or someone was unfortunate, because in the first week in the cabaret bar at the Pleasance, a group that was meant to be on at 12 o'clock dropped out.
Right.
And Christopher mentioned this to us and said there was a space, and so we just went, bang, well, we'll jump in there and do something.
Yeah.
So we had to print out flyers, photocopy, we have to draw things, so photocopy the flyers and then go down and busk. And the first day I think we had the tech staff there. And for the second day, we had, 14 people. And the day after that, we had 40 people. And the day after that, we had, 150. And then at the end of that week, we didn't have another gig again. Yeah. But luckily someone dropped out at 3 o'clock. Didn't come along, so he jumped in there again. And the first day we had the tech staff and five people, and then it just built. And so by the time we got to the last week of the festival and that 12 o'clock show, it was sold out every night. And right. Yeah, we just loved the place and the reaction.
That could happen in the Fringe in the 1980s. You know, it's a much smaller affair, and you know, you could just come rock up without being in any programs, and people would find you. Yeah,
it was word of mouth, more than anything else. People talking. I don't know if that happens anymore.
No. Well, I'm sure the people of Edinburgh wouldn't give you a free room anymore. Maybe £4,000 for the month. You might get something. But so things have changed a lot in every direction.
Right? Yeah, they certainly have.
It's sort of incredible. But those were, I mean, it was an amazing time, I think, like we were coming up from university doing sort of sketch stuff and then coming up and seeing all the stand-ups, basically, and sort of blowing our mind. Jerry Sadovitz was one of them.
Oh, Jerry.
You've got a similar sort of sensibility, though I think he probably even out offends you guys.
Oh, Jerry's amazing. Yeah. And you know, a wonderful example, I think, of Scottish culture. the first time we ever saw Jerry, he was busking on the mound.
Right.
And it was quite crowded, and there was, like, you know, Chilean pipe orchestras, and there was a couple of bands there that had amplifiers and speakers, and there were people that were quite professional, and we were doing our little ragtag sort of trio, and then this Beano character appeared with the crazy hair and the little sort of bowler hat and the black jacket, but the red and black mohair jumper, and Jerry had a clothes horse, a wooden clothes horse in one hand, and he had the Girl Guide's book of rules or guidelines from 1956, and it still baffles me to this day how he came up with this concept, but he would read a line from the Girl Guide's guidebook of 1956, he'd scream it out, and then he would get the wooden clothes horse and smash it on the ground and move forward with it and then scream, "Give me money." And it was... to this day, I still think it is one of the most, you know, brilliant busking acts I've ever seen. Yeah. People, like... There was nowhere in that mall. Everyone was so crowded in. The only space was around Jerry Sadowitz. He was managing to part, you know, the waters in front of him. People were just absolutely terrified. It was fantastic.
And Tim, you've written a book about... You're quite into the theory of comedy, is that right? And you've written a book about...
Oh, yeah. In Australia, nobody talks about, you know, how you write comedy for TV. Like, how do you write a sitcom, or how do you write a funny film, or how do you even write a sketch? Nobody gets told how this works, so I thought I'd better go and write it down in a book, because I was teaching it at one of the universities, and... it's called The Cheeky Monkey, and it will explain how to be funny, but it won't help you with hair care tips, which obviously is some of the funniest stuff that's happening in this crowd this morning. But it's so important to tell, you know, screenwriters in particular, you can't just be miserable all the time. It doesn't hurt to have a gag every once in a while.
Yeah. Al was saying, I haven't read it, but Al was saying it was an amazing book and I should read it. So
it's all ripped off from Aristotle and from people who know more than I do.
You're allowed to rip off Aristotle, I think. I don't think he's coming back.
Oh, yeah. And
a great Greek filmmaker as well.
Ancient Greek lawyers are lousy.
And this is a very exciting venue to be in. We're in a Masonic hall. So behind all these curtains and stuff, there's like weird sort of, there's a big Masonic organ back there.
Mm.
Do you have Masons? Did the Masons make it to Australia?
Oh, the Masons, I think, are all the way around the world, I believe. But we have Masons, Freemasons in Australia.
We're not supposed to talk about that.
The first year we came to Edinburgh, we stayed in Johnson Terrace, which is near the castle, and the whole of the theatre group were just sleeping on the floor of the Masonic temple. They've got a lot of Masonic temples here in Edinburgh. That's two within like half a mile of each other. But we slept on the floor, so that's my memory. And we went down into the basement one day, and there was a TARDIS in there. It was genuinely a TARDIS in there.
There was a show called Sleep. I wonder if it's still going.
Oh.
Where all you needed was a fire officer and a health person, like a nurse, to sit there backstage, and the audience would turn up with blankets, sit in the chairs, and everybody would go to sleep. It was an 8-hour show. It would start at midnight and go till the morning, and it was where everybody who didn't have somewhere to stay in Edinburgh could go, and it was really highly populated and entertaining for the occasional enterprising couple.
I'm having memories now of that first year, and you'd always hear about shows that have been there like the year before you that you'd never seen. Yeah. There was some clown show that sounded so brilliant and frightening that I really regret never seeing that one. But there was also, and I may get all the details of this wrong and paraphrase slightly and distort history completely, but let's say it was a Czechoslovakian juggling or theatre group, and people would queue up to see them. And what they would do is, before the show, they'd come and grab people out of the line and take them backstage to incorporate them in the show. What the people that were taken out of the line didn't realise was that this group had built a fake stage, or elevated the stage area, and it had little holes in it that their heads poked through. So all these people had their little heads poking through as this Czechoslovakian juggling group juggled bowling balls and chainsaws above their heads. And so their loved ones were in the audience while these people screamed their goddamn guts out. I don't think anyone was injured in the end, which was a blessing, but I think I would have loved to have seen that. This is a place of absolute, unadulterated madness.
Yeah.
And it's just gotten exponentially more phenomenal.
I mean, this is a question that journalists all ask me, and do you think it's kind of got too big, or do you think it's... I mean, I feel in a lot of ways comedy's better now because people have to work so much harder to get anywhere, whereas we could turn up and maybe get a show or maybe make up a show as we went along. You couldn't really do that now.
I suppose it was frontier land when we started. Yeah, it really felt like frontier land. So I suppose civilization has moved in and it's made a bit more sense of it. In those days, you know, you could honestly, if you wanted to do something, you would just do it.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, you use a magic trick in our show, which is just it's a fake cigarette with a bit of talcum in it and a bit of flash paper.
Yeah.
But we had to have a safety officer come in and check to see if that was going to be deadly for people. And you're thinking that, when we were youngsters, no one was around to say that's not safe. We had a first year we were in Edinburgh, we had a bonfire at the back of the Pleasance because we were there in that last week, and the last night I noticed Anthony and some of the people that now run the Pleasance, who were crew back in that day, moving some of the sets, like taking the sets to throw them on a bonfire. And I said, what are you doing? And they said, oh, we're just going to burn all these sets. And we went, oh well, what time? And they're going, oh, we're going to do it now. I said, why don't you wait till 1 o'clock when we finish the show and we'll come out and have a bonfire? And they went, okay. You would never get away with that sort of stuff now.
That is, in fact, what I was going to ask you in emergency questions, and one of the emergency questions I ask is, what is the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire? So that may be the answer already.
Well, it was credit cards, because we at one stage we were, I don't know if you've ever done that sort of Christian thing, or it's part of a group dynamic where you write down your sins or you write down the problems that you have in life or things that you want to solve, and you throw these things into a fire and it releases you. And as a joke, as the fire was blazing, I can't remember, maybe yourself or myself, one of us said, ladies and gentlemen, credit cards are a great evil in society. Let's get our credit cards and throw them onto the fire. And we had a friend there called Nigel Smith, and he went, I owe, 2,000 pund on this thing, and he threw it in the fire. What surprised us was that it started everyone throwing, coming forward, making a confession and throwing credit cards in the goddamn bonfire.
Wow.
So it was, it was a very funny experience. Yeah. And as a joke, I thought it'd be great. I got a big bit of 4x2 and threw it into the middle of the blaze, and it parted slightly, and I thought, I'll run across that. And it was amazing. I ran across through the fire and made it, and everyone, it was a moment of ecstasy, just rippled through everyone, and I thought, oh, that's incredible, I can do that again, but I couldn't.
So in the embers of the fire that night, you could find one of the Doug Anthony.
I've never rolled as quickly.
Wow.
But anyway, madness, we
crazy
did mad
time.
Things.
I remember when I went to see Michael Moore's show, he tried to make everyone throw away their nectar cards, because he said they were evil and they were a way of making people, keep a tags on you. Mm. So everyone was throwing them away. But I had 250 quid on mine, so I didn't do it. All right, I'll ask you an emergency question from the Emergency Questions Book, which is available from gofasterstrike.com or from over there after the show. I'm selling some merchandise. If you haven't yet got your Emergency Questions Book, it's a lot of fun. Question 436, this is a disease-based one you might enjoy. If you had a finger that could cure rectal cancer, but only if you pushed it hard up the anus of the cancer sufferer, would you cure anyone, everyone, or be like Jesus and just cure a few?
I think it would depend on the prophet anus.
So you would judge it by the anus.
Yeah,
you like the
it.
Anus.
Yeah, yeah. I'd eventually probably give in and just go there and cure everyone. Yeah. But, you know, you had that power.
What I think about Jesus, though. He could cure leprosy. If I'd been Jesus, I would have just cured leprosy. All of the leprosy. I'd have said, well, I've got 3 years left. I'm going to cure all leprosy.
Not just ten lepers.
He cured 10 lepers. What a cunt.
You do know he's an imaginary character, though.
Well, so long as they ask nicely, like really, really nicely, even if they're sick or not sick, it doesn't matter. They have to ask nicely.
I'd even cure the people that don't have cancer.
No.
I'd give the people cancer. No, so it's being in your company is making me much worse than I usually am. What is your most terrifying encounter that you've ever had with the ventriloquist dummy? Is it...
Can I just go back to the last question,
yeah.
please?
Yeah, okay, so yeah, please do.
I'd cure myself first.
Okay.
Nice chatting to you, Richard.
That's all right, it's good to know. Have you ever had a terrifying encounter with... Or a ventriloquist? Stuart Lee once masturbated me with a ventriloquist. About 30 years ago today, probably, actually. Thinking about it. He once masturbated me using the hand of my 100-year-old ventriloquist dummy. To give you some background, I think most
people... Was the puppet talking at the time?
He wasn't. He was concentrating on what he was doing. He was closed mouth. It was only for a very brief second, but... Yeah. No, what you're going, because you wished it had been longer, or because you're thinking of the emotional... You know, I've got a bit in my show now about me fancying puppets, and that's all, it all goes back to...
At least the dummy god would.
Hey! Hey! My great-granddad made it. It was a very offensive thing. All right, I'll ask you this question. If you had to be in a human centipede, if you had to be... you're going to be in the middle... But you can choose who's either side. Who would you have in front of you and who would you have behind you? That's a question for all of you. I mean, we could do one with the three of you.
a very short centipede. Oh, I think in front, I'd have to have a waifish model of some kind that doesn't sort of eat anything apart from, you know, peeled grapes and lettuce. Yeah. I think I could cope with that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't give a shit who was behind me.
Right. There's no...
The Dalai Lama for me. Because it's got to be good for you. It's out of the Dalai Lama. And behind, really, I don't know, Nigel Farage. I mean, anybody.
It's a popular choice.
Yeah, it's a very popular choice.
I met Farage recently. I was on a TV show with him. I don't like to talk about it. It was very mentally scarring. It was. I still haven't quite got over it. I couldn't look him in the face. I couldn't shake his hand or look him in the eye. I kind of wish I just said to him, you have destroyed our country. I hope you're pleased with yourself. But there we go. Never mind. Horrible man.
You could have a question in that book you could have asked him.
Yeah, I had the book. That's what. Well, you know, we won't go into it. It's a long story, but which eventually I will be prepared to talk about. But I was going on to basically talk about this book and then they...
An odious creature.
He is.
An absolutely odious creature.
He's horrible.
Yep.
Have you heard of a human centipede, Mr.
He would. Have you got a human centipede answer, Paul?
A pass.
Damn it, I should have done that.
No one's thought to do that before. That's a very clever answer.
Pass what is the question?
Okay. I've gone to Joe Thomas's page. That we can't ask you about that. And I like the you obviously there's brain scans at the back of your all the time at the back of your show, which I'm presuming are they your actual brain scans? Or
yeah, I mean they're blown up much bigger than my actual brain. Which they said to spend a couple of MRI hours just finding it.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting backdrop. I had a brain scan for less, for more kind of well, it was for some medical research. I talked to Sarah Pascoe about it in the podcast that isn't out yet. They were trying to work out where creativity came from in comedians' brains, so it wasn't for a medical purpose.
But they chose you.
Yeah, they chose me. Yeah, I think it was... and Sarah Pascoe, which was probably a better choice. but that's, it's an interesting. It's interesting to see your own brain, though, right? And
it's quite strange. You know, the first time I saw an MRI of my own brain, I stared at it for quite some time, thinking, so this is actually me. Like everything I've seen, everything I think, everything I do is in this little pool of pulsing offal. That explains a lot.
Well, and it's so fragile, and so it's an amazing thing, and temporary and transitory, and it's kind of and yet so so complicated and amazing. The way the brain folds in on itself, doesn't it, in order to give you more mental capacity.
And everything in our body is generated and works to keep the brain happy.
Yeah,
you know, it does everything it can and will sacrifice itself to make sure the brain's still going. The brain is the lucky golden little useless piece of offal that gets carried around and spoilt the whole time. You want more blood? Here you go. Have it regular.
Have you just worked MS back into the conversation?
I started it. I think that's fair enough. And are you going to carry? Yeah, you sort of joke about you're going to come back next year on your own, various reasons.
Well, you know, the prognosis, you know, Tim said was quite bad when we got back together. I think he used it as a lever to convince me that, you know, we should do, you know, time's short, he said.
Yeah.
But he is hanging on. it's already gone for about a year and a half longer than I thought it would, and so I am getting a little bit tense at this point.
So will you come back? Will you come back next year, if you know, God willing, and it's heaven above?
Oh yeah, God willing. You know, if these wheels are turning, and if the guitar's still playing, and if Paul is still singing like a meadowlark, we will be back wreaking vengeance for what you're doing this year. Oh yeah, clap now, Scotland.
And it's, I mean, it's amazing. You know, it's hard enough to come to go or to or from Australia. Anyway, and so for you, you must love doing this to come over from Australia to Edinburgh to keep coming back to the festival.
Oh yeah, the aeroplane flight is no fun. If anybody's ever flown to Australia, there's a reason they don't come back.
Wolf Creek. And I'd tell you what, there are antics on the flight as well. I don't know if they're things we want to go into here, but yeah, it's quite difficult to travel that long distance.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a great time because I was using kind of this portable catheter thing, which is like it's called a Uridom. Use your imagination. So, of course, you've got, you know, two of the finest minds available inside the tiny toilet cubicle trying to work out, you know, how do we get the wee out? I don't know. There's a valve. I don't know. We spent 10 minutes trying to work it out. And we kept saying to each other, it's got to be simple. Otherwise, how could it confound us? So,
I thought the Mile High Club would be much better experience.
But you in particular, I think, Tim, look like you're having a lot of fun during the show. You look like you're...
It's a blast. I get to watch the two funniest guys I've ever seen alive, and the three working. So I'm there in the middle of all this comedy. I just let it happen, and occasionally I interrupt. Quite often to say, keep going, you're going very well.
Well, I think I love it. I think it's an amazing testament to life and being alive and friendship and love and hatred. And there's a lot of things in there that I think it's a magical show. I wish I'd seen your last show, which, again, everyone says was terrific and you won awards for and got amazing reviews for. I'm sure the same will happen for this show. So do go and see it. Let's say what time it is. It's on at Pleasance 4th at...
10 p.m.
Right through the whole festival?
Yeah, 4 weeks of Doug Anthony All-Stars. I mean, I'm exhausted just getting through the sentence.
It's an absolutely fantastic show. And you're going to do a song for us now that isn't in this show. That's from, is it from last year's show?
Or yeah, we did. Well, it's actually from many years ago. We did it on a show called The Big Gig in Australia. It was a thing called The Old Triangle and a beautiful song, Brendan Behan's classic. Okay. And it's undergone a little bit of change.
Okay.
Thought, in those days, it was a very reverent version of the song.
Yeah.
And we when we're touring through the counties of Ireland, it was a stunning reaction that people had with this song. So surprised that Australians knew it or that we'd even be singing it. And it was one of those sort of tearful moments in the shows that we did then. But because of things have happened, so it's not quite the song it was, but we still get a real thrill out of performing it. So if that's all right,
yeah, I'd love to. That'd be amazing. Yeah,
okay. It's not shaped like a triangle like it used to be.
Okay. Stand up for this one.
I won't. I mean, I like the song, but it's not that good.
Okay. Yes? You got it? Here? It's good?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks.
No. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, this could be interesting. All right. Word has come from Dublin City. She has lost her sweet angry voice. Born with a spirit his flesh could not contain. Brendan Behan is dead. No stranger to life, he lived right enough. No stranger to the glass in his hand. No stranger to the cause he fought for all his life. Brendan Behan is dead. A hungry feeling came over me stealing while the mice were feeding in my prison cell. And the old triangle went jingle jangle all along the banks of the Royal Canal on a fine spring evening as I lay dreaming and the lad was weeping in his prison cell. And the old triangle went jingle jangle all along the banks of the Royal Canal. Ah, the wind was sighing as the day was dying and the lag still crying in his prison cell. And the old triangle went jingle bloody jangle all along the banks of the Royal Canal. In the women's prison there are 17 women, and I wish it was with them that I did well. And that old triangle to go jingle bloody jangle all along the banks of the Royal Canal.
Are you all right?
Ireland has lost her sweet angry singer.
And the old triangle.
No longer his poems are fine designed.
Jingle bloody jangle. We should use this in the song.
will ring out in Gaelic or sound through the main. Brendan Behan is dead. No,
it doesn't work. It's broken.
You're the thing that doesn't work. You're the thing that's broken. God almighty.
Thank you.
Let's have done with your stars.
Oh my God.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We'll be back next week on Friday in here, 1:50. The guests are James Acaster. Yeah. Who you can't get tickets for, and I think Ian Sterling as well. If you want to buy an emergency question book or some of the rest of my merchandise, I will just be here after the show. I'm very happy to say hello. You don't have to buy anything. And thanks again to my fantastic guests, the Doug and the All-Stars!
Thank you, Richard Herring!
Thank you very much. See you next week. Bunk off work.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. Do come and say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.